everyone. It's Dr. Valerie here.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mackey.
Just know when you've slept good. So that urination one is a common one. You know what else is the common one? And I don't know if have you've heard this is waking up with heart palpitations.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, so I've been looking into some arrhythmia stuff recently. So there's a cortisol thing there. There's a vagus nerve issue going on there. I think there's a blood sugar component to, AFib or, increased heart rate in the middle of the night. I think there's a few things that are kind of coalescing all at one time. What have you noticed?
I notice women in menopause will have, they'll wake up with heart, or it feels like heart flip-flops. Like that's really, and they'll get it too sometimes like just laying down. And of course they get terrified and then go to the cardiologist, but it has to do with that estrogen and progesterone dropping, in particular that estrogen, because that has an effect on your adrenaline. So, which is another thing is sometimes people will wake up with anxiety or they're got like they're anxious. That could be blood sugar because the low blood sugar you mentioned. Or that could be, menopause, that estrogen dropping down. I've found that just because of there's so many different aspects to it. Like I said, it could be the adrenaline, even the serotonin, because when you go into menopause and that estrogen, or even perimenopause and that estrogen's dropping, is that can have an effect on your serotonin. It actually drops down, which I see more so is not only are they waking up with some heart palpitations, they're also waking up with that doom and gloom. Like they wake up in the middle of the night and they think these just bummer thoughts.
Worried or
Both, like
worse than worried.
worry, worst case scenario, things are going to happen. This is going to happen. Just really bummer thoughts. But then the next morning, yes, well, okay, those bummer thoughts. Oh, why was I thinking that? That's no big deal. That wasn't going to happen. That's never going to happen. But you feel that at night. And I think that has to do a lot with that estrogen being low, and then that serotonin being low, and then probably even a little bit with blood sugar. And when cortisol goes up, because cortisol, we're supposed to get up and go do something, not go to sleep. So I notice that's a really common one. If I have that somebody that has really that like doom and gloom in the middle of the night often, I mean, not everybody gets a great night's sleep every night, but it's happening often. And like I said, this is not for medical advice, but I've noticed in my experience with patients is trying to raise up their serotonin. And there's like 5-hydroxytryptophan when it's indicated, depending on their medications that they're on. That's a nice one to help raise up that serotonin. Even methylfolate, high doses of methylfolate, which methylfolate is a beautiful, considered part of the B vitamin, family, is that one's really nice for kind of helping work with serotonin and dopamine, because it's no fun to wake up in the middle of the night, but to wake up in the middle of the night feeling kind of sad and bummed is not fun,
Well,
especially when everyone else is asleep.
like you said, that woman that's in her late 40s to early 50s, and she's just trying to, transitioning into that early phase of menopause, she started having those palpitations. That's always a classic sign of low estrogen, right? You give her some estrogen cream, and all of a sudden the palpitations go away. Now, granted, they all go to the cardiologist. They should go to the cardiologist, but 9 times out of 10, it's never their heart, right? It's all these other things that we're talking about. But nobody really looks at it as being a menopausal problem, even though it's a, or an estrogen problem, but really it's a very classic lack of estrogen problem. And we've seen that many times. So we've had to deal with a lot of palpitations more times than you'd ever think we would have to, because a large part of our population ends up experiencing them at some point. And of course, it freaks everybody out. Now, the good thing about, and we're going to do some cardiovascular, presentations later, and really dive a little deeper into the arrhythmias. Because conventionally, there's no good treatments for arrhythmias. They put you on a beta blocker, they do a cardioversion, they do these things. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, and they just sort of switch gears and then try to prevent a stroke. Okay, now, if you're just having random episodes of palpitations, you're not going to have a stroke. You have to be in a chronic arrhythmia to have a stroke. So the blood thinners they put you on really is not necessary. But again, nobody wants to have the flip-flops and the heart doing funky things. And there's even some devices now too that you can get online that you can check your own EKGs at home, and which I think is just incredible. Like, I'm sort of fascinated by arrhythmias and EKGs. I used to work in a hospital, and I used to monitor EKGs in a what they call a telemetry unit on a coronary care floor. So I got really good at understanding what the different arrhythmias are and were. And so now that we do this, for a living, and now we're experiencing, in an indirect sort of way, experiencing arrhythmias, It doesn't bother me as much because I understand where they're coming from and what they are.
Can I ask you, so that was what, 25 years ago, or
Yeah,
what was that before? Because now people go home with a heart monitor, and then is that different? Before that
Oh, they
happened, were
still.
these actually cardiovascular patients that needed to be monitored because they had a condition or
Yeah,
what?
so they either. So well, I was on what's called a post-coronary care unit. And I was a cardiac monitor technician. So I used to sit in this small, tiny little room with eight computer screens. There's usually two of us in there because you couldn't leave them unattended. So people would have these patches on their electrodes
So
on their
they had
chest.
a coronary event prior.
They had
Oh,
surgery.
okay.
They had admitted to the ER. They had bypass surgery. They had heart failure. They had
Oh,
all the classic
so I was
heart.
like, how many menopausal women were in there? No, but this is really more, it sounds like somebody had some serious heart condition.
Someone's having chest pain in the middle of the night. They get admitted to the ER and they admit them to that. They
Got it.
go from the ER to that floor. They have surgery. They go from the surgery to the ICU and then to that floor. So I got to see lots of different things. I mean, just really fascinating stuff. But the good thing about atrial fibrillation, that's the most common thing that, women are experiencing when their heart's flip-flopping around like that. Is that it is a non-life-threatening arrhythmia. Like you're not going to die from AFib, right? It just, your heart rate goes up. Sometimes it can go up really high, up to like 300 beats a minute. It's not really beating 300 beats a minute. It's almost like you have a muscle spasm and the heart sort of quivers a little bit. So the electrical activity looks like it's beating 300 times, 300 beats a minute, but not really. Okay. It's sort of, but in that case, of course, that needs medical
Oh, yes.
treatment, medical intervention. These things that we're talking about are much more on a subtle side, but it still freaks people out.
Oh, yeah,
It freaks
no.
out the women, it freaks out the husbands. Nobody knows what to do. And the treatment side, there's not really a lot of good treatment options until you put them on submission and they just go away.
And women that aren't on HRT, or maybe they don't want to take it, or they aren't a candidate or whatnot, is I've found, because you had mentioned it, like a muscle spasm is actually doing electrolytes, with the magnesium, the calcium, the potassium. Sometimes the sodium, most people aren't too deficient in sodium, but that seems to help with those heart palpitations.
In a hospital, they should use IV magnesium for acute arrhythmias, and they just don't do it. But they use lots of other cardiac medications. But there's some research to support using IV magnesium. But you and I are not cardiologists. That's sort of here nor there. But certainly, like you said, you wake up and you got that little pitter patter in the middle of the night. That's enough to give you more anxiety, and then you can't go back to sleep. Right? That's not really a fun thing. So we got more to go here.
Yes, I've had maybe not that many, but a lot of women that wake up with calf cramps and muscle, like feet cramps. So that, of course, could be dehydration. That can be electrolytes. That can be potassium. But that I've noticed that some women, when they have those terrible night sweats, it actually creates dehydration, which then causes these muscle spasms, like the Charlie horses.
If you've had one of those, and I know a lot of our patients have, they don't feel very good. You can't like you need to like stand on it, but you can't stand on it, and it like re, you know it really hurts. I don't get them too often, but sometimes you'll get one like in the arch of your foot.
I remember when we went keto, because we experiment with everything. We went like hardcore keto, and I think I was probably not getting enough fluids because it does dehydrate you. I
It
got the
reduces potassium.
terrible Charlie horse. I was so bad, but not that keto was bad, but I think I wasn't doing it well.
Keto, like if you're doing keto or even carnivore for too long, it can deplete your potassium. And potassium is one of those key things to make sure you don't get cramps like that. That was a long time
Oh,
ago. That
yeah.
must have been like a decade ago.
Probably like a decade. And I even got like this weird rash on my chest because I did it twice. I thought maybe it was just a, I never get really rashes, but I got a weird rash on my chest. It wasn't really itchy, but a little bit. And then when I tried the keto again, of course, I didn't do it right because I probably wasn't getting enough hydration or the minerals and probably not enough calories. I got that rash again. And then the Charlie
Oh,
horses. So,
interesting.
like I said, keto isn't a bad thing. I think those few couple of times when I did it
It's
inappropriately.
sort of amazing. Part of that perfect weight loss solution book we wrote a long time ago was sort of around keto. There's like these couple of waves of keto. Keto's bad, keto's good, keto's bad, keto's good. I will say now, like there's this body of evidence that is coming out, like how actually therapeutic a keto diet actually is for for, we're always talking about insulin, right?
For your mental health.
For now they're using it for mental health patients
Seizures.
and having an amazing impact on some really, bipolar and schizophrenia and all these different things. No one would have thought that 20 years ago that you could have an impact on some of those debilitating mental health issues just by going keto. So cramps, there's, it looks like we got a couple left.
Yeah, one thing too, of course, with the hot flashes, I've had women, because they get dehydrated, whether they get cramps, they can get headaches, like wake up in the morning and they've got a headache. And sometimes even if they're not dehydrated, women can wake up with a headache when that estrogen drops because estrogen is so connected to serotonin, and some people are so sensitive to that serotonin drop that it will cause them like this almost like low grade headache.
What do you think about the headache being almost like another low blood sugar response, almost like hypoglycemia response? You think that's possible?
Yeah, absolutely, because people get headaches when they're hypoglycemic. So if they're having that,
Hangry in the middle of
yeah, or go eat
the
something. So I've had headaches. I've also had women that will complain about itchy. Like I, even though there's nothing on their skin, but they're just like just itchy. Like everywhere is itchy, and that can be actually high estrogen or low estrogen. So when women in perimenopause get this surge of estrogen, or you start some on HRT, maybe a little too high, a little too fast, is that can create a histamine response, which will cause that itchiness. But then also too, when that estrogen drops, that can cause a histamine response and cause itchiness. So that's another common one. That one, of course, HRT can be helpful for that, or even quercetin. I've had some really great results for itchy skin with quercetin, combining, of course, maybe some vitamin C, some bromelain, but the quercetin I think is always my kind of go-to for the
Sure,
itchy skin.
yeah.
Fish oil, you've always liked the fish oil for itchy skin.
Quercetin, fish oil, that can be a good combo. Nobody likes the, I like cod liver oil. Nobody likes the cod liver oil as opposed to a soft gel. I think the oil part of it actually works better. I had a, now that you say that about the itchy, I had a patient a number of years ago. I don't remember exactly how it resolved, but she was, this is a number of years ago, but she was complaining all the time of being almost like, to the point of almost going crazy from being so itchy. Couldn't figure it out. And I don't remember what happened, but then all of a sudden it just sort of disappeared. It was a little bit of, at the time anyways, practice of medicine, you sort of learn things as you go. I didn't understand the estrogen. I think in her case, her estrogen level was a little bit too high, and
Oh,
it
yeah.
was making her really itchy. And so that's really interesting. Now the last one you have on there, where does you have nightmares as the last one?
You know,
Where does that come
I
from?
wouldn't say I've noticed that much, but some women will say I'm getting nightmares at night. Nobody likes to have a nightmare, and that can be when that cortisol's too high. Your body's trying to wake you up, so it actually will create nightmares.
Like a night terror.
Yep, like a night terror, like nightmares. That's with the cortisol. I have noticed when people are supplementing with 5-HTP or melatonin, they might get really vivid, like movie-like dreams. They're not nightmares, but they're just like weird dreams, vivid dreams. With 5-HTP, B6, I've noticed that even like low dose naltrexone can cause some crazy wild dreams.
LDN. I've heard a few people like they couldn't take it because it just, they didn't like how their dreams sort of manifested. They went from not dreaming much at all to having these really sort of wild dreams. They didn't really like it that much. And that, like you said, that and the melatonin, it seems like those two do that. Melatonin, one of our members in our community was asking about melatonin a while back. And like, what are our thoughts about it? And I don't know why it sort of gets a bad rap all the time. Now, I will say, like people say, don't use it, but I think it's one of those things that you have to, especially if you can't fall asleep, okay? Or if you're a middle of the night and you can't go back to sleep quickly. I think it's one of those things you could at least experiment with just to see if it actually does something.
If it works, great. There was that conference we went to a while back, A4M in Vegas, and that one doctor was showing pictures, or like, the little images of people over 50, I think it was over 55, their pineal gland, and their little pineal gland was like a rock. It calcified, because things happen with age. So if there's calcifications, how is it going to, produce the level of melatonin that you need, like we had when we were younger. So I don't feel like it's, too negative to supplement with. It's not for everybody. It's not meant for everybody, but for the right person, it can be really great to go to sleep.
You know, I think we were talking about it that last time. half and half, 50-50. You know, it's like a coin toss. It's either going to help or not. I think dosing might play a role there, you know, depending on, and I know for some, even we'll get into estrogen metabolites at some point. I know you can use higher dose melatonin to shift the estrogen metabolites, which is totally different. At, you know, 20, 30, 40 milligrams, you're not going to have a sleep response there. But what would you say for sleep, like on upper limit, like 10 or less, 10 milligrams or less,
For
or even five?
women, I find that like 2.5, 3 milligrams, 5, but usually most women don't need more than 5,
Yeah.
because one thing is melatonin. So serotonin can convert to melatonin. I feel like there's a sort of a like a negative feedback loop that can happen when you do too much melatonin. So the body realizes, wow, you got a lot of melatonin, that it might downregulate your own production of
Yeah.
serotonin.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
we don't want to do that. But in certain cases, like you said, cancer, a lot of cancer patients, certain alternatives will do high dose melatonin, or like
As
you
an
said,
immune stimulator. Yeah. Yeah.
So there are indications or different cases for that. But there was something that you said at the very beginning of this podcast about obstructive sleep apnea. So that is one thing that maybe we can talk about this later, or do a little more research on it, that I think women, because I always think about sleep apnea, you think about the guy. It's always men that have sleep apnea. But I do think a lot more women have it. It's just being missed because they might not have that, the characteristics of when you're thinking about sleep apnea.
Yeah, maybe a overweight man with a big belly, you know, kind of a little portly, and of course he's gonna have, you know, he's gonna have sleep apnea, where a woman might not fit that profile, but could still very well have it.
Yeah, so now you can do these at-home sleep studies, out of pocket. They're only a few $100, and I think sometimes insurance covers it. But it is really interesting. So that might be something we might delve into, is looking at that, because I do feel like women are underdiagnosed for sleep apnea, and we all know sleep apnea can lead to Alzheimer's and dementia. Sleep apnea can lead to cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, if you're mouth breathing, even just mouth breathing, like, you know, I snore a little bit, so it wakes you up. So I actually do some mouth tape, and I 100% sleep so much better when I, you know, forces me to breathe through my nose as opposed to breathing through my mouth. Just one of those things to sort of enhance the proper air conduction. You know, if you're snoring, or if you have sleep apnea, you're sort of mildly hypoxic and your cortisol goes up, right? And then that becomes that vicious cycle. So anyone, you know, husband or, you know, even the partner, whatever, if they do have sleep apnea, you sort of have to have that corrected, because metabolically speaking, it's like a runaway freight train, right? Because that cortisol is going to be elevated all night long. And like I said, the risks, diabetes, Alzheimer's, everything on the back end of that is magnified, you know, by a lot. Yeah, that's, but you don't really, yeah, you're right. You don't really think about sleep apnea in women. It's usually sleep apnea in men. That never really gets brought up. We have to look into those at-home sleep studies. That's actually a really good idea. And who wants to go into a clinic and be, you know, monitored while you're sleeping? I don't think anybody wants to do that. You know, but if you do it at home, that's, you know, that's great. You know, that's really, really convenient, but yet still valuable from a data collection standpoint to see what's going on. I'd love to know how they monitor that. You know,
Oh, it's like this kit they send to your house. So, like, I would order it for a patient and put in, a diagnosis, and even have make it easy where you don't even have to do that much. And then they send it, drop ship it to the patient, and then the patient does that home study test. And then, actually, from that company, they will have a doctor, a sleep doctor, a sleep physician, interpret the results, because I could never interpret the results. I haven't been trained in that. And then let you know if they have, what level of sleep apnea, or if they have obstructive sleep apnea at all. Because
Sure.
if anybody's waking, so that will be one thing maybe we'll go into or talk a little bit about.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of women, when they tell me that they're waking up in the morning, they're tired, they're dehydrated, they have a headache. Is it hormones or is it obstructive sleep apnea? They're saying, oh, I do snore. My husband says I snore. That, because it does run in the family. I
Sure.
do think it's not just about being overweight, but I do think that it can run in the family. And then, as our hormones go down, our collagen goes down, our ligaments can get more lax. So I do
Yeah, our
think
soft
that's.
palate changes. Yeah, there's lots of structural things that are anatomical things that happen, not only metabolically speaking as well. You just said something too that caught my attention. I don't remember what it was. It'll come
So
back
you
to
need
me.
that pregnenolone.
Yeah, Yeah, you just said something and I, lost the thought, but certainly. Why are you laughing?
Like I said, you need that pregnant alone. Or
Yeah.
maybe we should do a sleep study for you. No, I'm just kidding.
I probably need one.
One for
Yeah,
you.
yeah, yeah. I know for sure, like, that 2, 3 o'clock window. I don't do it all the time, but when I do, it seems like it goes in little stretches and then it dies off, and then it goes in little stretches and it sort of dies off. Not every night. Some nights are good. Some nights are really good. Some nights are not so good. A little hit and miss. Oh, that was the other thing. So you're talking about the sleep apnea. So I'm assuming it's some kind of a wearable device, right? So I think a really good way to sort of pair those two things together is to do a sleep study like that and to wear a CGM, right? So now you're getting two pieces of data, where you get the sleep study data and you get the blood sugar data. And honestly, I'm sure there's
And
some,
put that heart monitor on there while you're at it. Why
and a
not?
heart monitor on there too, your heart
Your
rate and
strap.
your Whoop strap or your Apple Watch, and you got your heart rate variability with those sort of things to sort of look at and see what's going on. If you are waking up, does it correlate with a rise in blood sugar? Because that's what I noticed when we were wearing those. My
Oh,
blood
yeah.
sugar, when I slept good, look at my data the next day, nice flat line, no fluctuation. If I'm waking up, I'd automatically look at the CGM data, and sure enough, it's sort of spiking right at the time that I'm waking up. And I guarantee it. Now we have the benefit of being able to monitor those things in real time. That's one of those things that, until now, you're never really able to look at that. In most conventional sleep studies, they're not looking at your blood sugar. It'd be nice if they had like a cortisol CGM or an insulin CGM.
Oh, that would be cool.
We were talking about with someone having an estrogen or an FSH CGM. That'd be pretty
Be
good.
cool.
That'd be pretty cool too. All right, so should we
Okay.
wrap this one up?
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. All right. If you have any comments or questions, certainly let us know. We're gonna post this little report here, and just so you can read it and have kind of what we are going off of as a resource.
Yeah, because we have more of the different supplements that might correlate with the different sleep conditions. So I'll put that in the, would it go in the resources of the community? Where do we put that?
Yeah, I'll put it in resources, but I'll also put it in where we put the live event recording.
Okay.
I'll put it in
So
there as
the
well. So
viewers can
it'll
see
be
that.
sort of in two spots. Certainly we'll probably go into sleep again. There's lots to
There
talk
is.
about. But this is at least a kind of a initial overview anyways. All right. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.